Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. And if this is your first time watching or listening to the show, know that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, I'd really appreciate if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and know that sharing my show and others like it that focus on improved health, happiness, education, and success is one powerful way we can make a positive influence in the world together. Now, as many of you know, our healthcare professionals were pushed to the limits during the COVID pandemic, causing many of them to just burn out. I spoke to many people in that industry that had just had enough, and I don't blame them. Well, know that burnout is still on the rise, and this is a problem we can't afford to ignore. The rising cost, not just monetary, of burnout are staggering. Healthcare professionals sacrifice their health, their happiness, and in some cases, their relationships. Unfortunately, our guest, Dr. Greg Hammer, created Gain Without Pain so that healthcare professionals and anyone with a heart for helping others can learn to prevent burnout and reclaim their happiness. I'll tell you a little bit about him. Greg is a professor at Stanford University School of Medicine, a pediatric intensive care physician, pediatric anesthesiologist, mindfulness expert, and author of Gain Without Pain, the Happiness Handbook for Healthcare Professionals. Now, he is a member of the Stanford Wellness MD Initiative and the former chair of the Physician Wellness Task Force for the California Society of Anesthesiologists. Dr. Hammer has been a visiting professor and lecturer on wellness at institutions worldwide and teaches Gain Without Pain to medical students, residents, and fellows at Stanford. His clinical focus is in pediatric cardiac anesthesia and pediatric critical care medicine. His research is in developmental pharmacology and immunology, and he has an active laboratory with multiple ongoing studies in these areas. Dr. Hammer is himself a health enthusiast and meditator, utilizing a non-duality and mindfulness-based approach, including the GAIN method. Greg, welcome to Answers Network.
Great to be with you, Alan.
Well, I want to jump right in regards to your book. And one of my questions is, when did you start writing this? Was this something that was started before the pandemic, or during the pandemic, did you see something that you saw that really needed to be approached?
I actually wrote it before the pandemic. It was published in May of 2020, and it was really completed before the pandemic started. And I would sort of back up and say that we at Stanford formed this WellMD initiative back in 2011 in response to the growing prevalence of burnout among physicians. This was becoming a crisis for a number of reasons. As you pointed out, there are not only economic costs of physician burnout, but also a decrement in the quality of care that physicians provide, and physician depression, physicians leaving healthcare, suicide. There's more than on average one suicide per day among physicians in the United States. So there are lots of costs of burnout. So we formed this initiative in order to try to identify what the real causes are and what some of the solutions might be. And so I was a member of that task force or committee, and I was asked to give a talk at a national meeting as somebody had approached the WellMD leadership, and I volunteered to do that, and then got invited again and again and again. And pretty soon I was doing a lot of speaking on burnout and wellness. And then I had a sabbatical, which is one of the perks of being a professor at Stanford. And so I had 6 or 8 months where I was able to kind of step out of my clinical arena and have some time. And I figured, why not write a book and really get the message out there further? So that's what I did. And I've been talking about that book ever since. And now I'm writing another one, which is really oriented for teenagers who have had a really, really difficult time in the past 3 or 4 years. So yes, I've had a long time interest in physical health. My undergraduate degree is in nutritional biochemistry. It's so important. So I've really investigated sleep, exercise, physiology, and nutrition to a great deal over the last 10 or 20 years. And I've been speaking to very broad groups of people well outside of the healthcare sector. And really, burnout is something I think that affects all of us. And I think, as you and I are probably relative contemporaries, but I would say that this last 3 years or so has been unlike any other in our lifetimes, and more stressful. And so many of us are suffering from chronic stress and burnout.
Well, I certainly agree with that. As you shared the information in regards to like the next upcoming book, how soon do you anticipate that coming out? Because I would love to have you back, because this show was initially, before we rebranded, was Answers for the Family. And we focused a lot on what our teenagers were going through. And so it is an area that's near and dear to my heart. So I'd love to talk to you more about that, as well as have you back on when that one's ready to be released.
Sure. Well, you know, the publishing industry is a bit behind. Indeed, supply chain issues have hit them and everybody else, and that's not over. I guess they've been paper shortages, so books have been delayed and so on. So probably not for another year or so, but I'd be happy to come back for sure.
Okay. Now let's go back to the fact that you were part of a team that was looking into the burnout issue long before the pandemic. Is there anything that you can see that might have sped up the process in regards to, or why more people were going through burnout? And the first thought that comes to my mind based on the timing that you gave is, does it have anything to do with the managed care being sort of taking over?
It does, Alan. We really identified three arenas that overlap that contribute to burnout. And this is not only for physicians, but others who work, in fact. And they are, one, the culture of the workplace. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of people talk about microaggressions, certainly macroaggressions, and cultures that are not really supportive of all of the people in the workplace, create a lot of animosity among certain individuals and so on. So culture is a big one. And the second one is efficiency. And so, you know, no matter how resilient you are, if you're at the workplace and you're staying there for an extra hour, hour and a half every night because of inefficiencies in the workplace, it's going to be tough to be happy with your job. And the third is personal resilience. So I think it's important that people recognize that being resilient is essential and, of course, important, but it's not going to solve every problem. If your workplace has a really adverse culture, if it is a very inefficient place to work, then no matter how resilient you are, it's going to be tough to be happy in your work and in your life. But as you pointed out, managed care is one of the factors that has created, let's say, stress inefficiencies, among other things. So, for example, if you're a clinic physician and your administrators tell you need to see more patients every hour, and so that gets your template gets reconfigured, so you have to see 15 patients an hour instead of 10 or 12. What's going to happen if you're not given more exam rooms and more technical assistance to turn the rooms over and so on? Your patients are going to be sitting in the waiting room as you get further and further behind. And then, of course, when they fill out their patient satisfaction surveys, press gainy or otherwise, they're going to represent their unhappiness.
Right.
And in many cases, they're unhappy with their physician, even though the physician has no control over those things at all. So And that adds a lot of stress and keeps clinic doctors at work later and later in the day. And they've got more charts to bring home in many cases. And so, yes, of course, this is a tremendous burden and adds to their stress quite a bit.
Yeah, what led me in that direction was, and I've been blessed from the standpoint that I have very rarely ever been in a hospital. And I had a general practitioner prior to managed care kicking in that was a wonderful doctor that had his own practice, and he took the time to talk to everybody, and he was just such a wonderful doctor, and I was so blessed to be able to have him as my doctor. And then when managed care came in, he retired. He sold his practice, he retired, and the new people that took over, it was a whole different environment. And when you mentioned culture, it made me think of this. The culture was so different, whereas when before, his name was Dr. Enns, and before with him, everything from the person at the front desk, or if I called, everybody was happy. They were pleased. They took their time. And with the new corporation that took over his practice, I felt like a number. And when I did go in to see somebody, it was get through it quick. Now, look, I don't have time. Just, okay, boom, here, take this med, go. And it was a shock to me because I'd been spoiled by having someone that was so attentive. So what do you think are some of the things that, that can be done to keep the patients from feeling like this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And of course, this kind of pressure on the system applies across the board, not just in the healthcare sector. But I think that for economic reasons, most areas of the economy are under a lot of pressure to perform to a greater and greater degree. And so the pressure just mounts, the competition mounts for retail merchants. All of the online booming industries have put pressure on them. We all have seen many, brick and mortar storefronts close. I was just in Chicago. I was walking down Michigan Avenue. I've never seen empty storefronts before now. And that may have something to do with crime as well as just the economic pressure. But again, the crime is a manifestation of economic pressure as well. So, I think to some extent, it's sort of hard to dial things back. And that's why, I think that the efficiency of our practice and business environment and the culture of those areas as well is really left up to the leadership. So, I think the culture of the workplace is largely a leadership issue. Leaders need to lead by example and also put in place policies and procedures that protect everybody and emphasize positivity, gratitude, positive interpersonal interactions and so on. That's really a leadership administrative issue. Similarly with efficiency, hiring the right number of people from top to bottom and really trying to make things as efficient as possible without turning up the heat too much. I leave those things up to the leadership as well, although I certainly, voice my views. My emphasis is really on personal resilience, where I feel that I can have the greatest impact. I've never been really that interested in administration. I've sort of dodged a lot of administrative responsibility in my career in favor of patient care and research and teaching. And also, self-care, not only for myself, but interacting with others to forward that directive as well. So I think that third circle, if you will, beside culture and efficiency being personal resilience is where I'm most interested. So that's really where I spend my time.
Yeah. Again, for those that listen a lot, they know that I recently went through a severe medical situation now about 2 months ago. And I live just about 2 minutes from Hoag Hospital, and I was taken to Hoag Hospital, and the culture there was phenomenal. And that's, and I say the culture because it wasn't just the doctors, it was the nurses, it was the orderlies, it was everybody at every level, from the moment in which, actually from the moment I was picked up by the paramedics, but also from the moment in which I stepped foot in there. I felt like these were people that cared about what happened to me. And I just can't praise enough, you know, the fact that, and how important I think it is, as you say, there's somebody at a leadership level that's making decisions there that are the way to do it. And that I think a lot of other places maybe could take note of what they're doing and, you know, and try and emulate it as much as possible.
Well, you know, the fact is that the great majority of people that go into healthcare care about people. They want mm-hmm. to help people. They're, you know, they're very well intended. And it's really only when, you know, practice efficiency and the culture of the workplace is allowed to deteriorate that people get short-tempered, impatient, you know, less than real, really sort of customer-oriented, if you will. And, you know, I think most of us are nice people. We want to help others. And if we're allowed to do that, then you know, people like you will have very nice things to say about their local healthcare facility.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think one of the things that you brought up was the number of people. You know, when somebody will say, well, you know, I'm projecting a really good culture out there, but if you're not hiring enough people, you're still putting the strain on those people that are there. That, and as I brought up in the beginning, which is information I got from your book, which is, you know, if it's affecting their relationship at home, because they're putting in 12, 14, 16 hours, you know, that's going to make it more and more difficult for them to do their job properly as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Now, in your book, which again, for those out there, is Gain Without Pain, you write about a four-step process towards happiness. And I love the fact that throughout your book, you're talking about happiness, you're talking about gratitude, talking about so many things that are within our control if we just approach it correctly. So but anyway, share with us those steps and why each one is so important.
Sure. Well, GAIN is an acronym for gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment. And I think those are really the four pillars of happiness, Alan. And they're manifest in all really positive religious and spiritual philosophical traditions as well. So certainly not of my device. But I spent a lot of time thinking about, you know, what are the essentials? And in medicine, of course, we like acronyms. If you came on rounds in the intensive care unit, you might not understand a word we're saying because we use so many acronyms. And I've had, you know, read a lot. I studied Buddhism as an undergraduate as well. And I've read a lot about various spiritual traditions, mainly Eastern. I've been a student of something called Advaita or non-duality for quite a while. And there's often mentioned the seven steps of this or the 12 ways of that. That's too many for me to remember. So I got it down to four: gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment. And I really do think those are the four pillars of happiness. And, you know, we could start with gratitude. And gratitude, just from our empiric experience, is intrinsically linked to happiness. We can imagine somebody who is poor and happy, physically challenged perhaps and happy, but it's really hard to even imagine somebody who's ungrateful and happy. And, you know, gratitude is something that is accessible to us at all times. I think that we all have much for which to be grateful. But, you know, our brains are wired in ways that tend to veil or mitigate our happiness. And those two of the ways that I talk about a lot are, one, we have a negativity bias. We tend to remember the negative and forget the positive. Mm-hmm. I read that 80% of our thoughts are negative and 20% are positive, and that sort of resonates with me. So we have a negativity bias. And the other thing is that we are very obsessed with and overthink the past and the future. And happiness is really in the present moment, which is in fact, the only moment that we truly experience. The past and the future are just thoughts in a way. That's our, you know, our memories and our projections are just thoughts that come and go. And so we have a hard time being in the present moment. And so when we overthink the past, combined with our negativity bias, we tend to generate a lot of regret and shame and low self-esteem and depression, which is obviously a huge phenomenon in our society. And when we overthink the future, combined with our negativity bias again, we tend to imagine the worst that can happen. We catastrophize, and this leads to a lot of fear and anxiety. So anxiety and depression, I think, are two of the biggest personal issues that many of us deal with every day. And the good news is that our brains, though wired in ways which lead to this negativity bias and obsession with the past and future, have a magical quality called neuroplasticity. And neuroplasticity means that we can actually change the way our brains are wired. We can rewire our brains. And that's what the GAIN method is all about. We think this way, our brains are wired the way they are, thanks to tens of thousands of years of evolution. And so we're not going to change them or rewire our brains overnight. But again, the good news is that we can take steps if we have purposefulness or intention, the I in GAIN, to rewire our brains, just baby steps every day. And I think, therefore, it's so important to have a daily practice where we sit with these four important principles of gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment. And we can do this in a short period of time. So the morning GAIN meditation that I advocate, practice, describe, is one that can be done in as little as 3 minutes. So perhaps we could just walk through that if you'd like.
Well, you know what I'd like to do? We're at about the time that we would take a break. So let's take a break, but let's share with the fact that when we come back, we're gonna talk a little bit about some of the things that you can do, starting with a morning practice to help rewire your brain. We're talking with Dr. Greg Hammer. The book is called GAIN Without Pain. You're listening to or watching Answers Network. We'll be right back.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range. Enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team, developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practiced lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Knowledge.
And we're back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network. With us is Dr. Greg Hammer, and we're talking now about gratitude and some of the steps that you can take to rewire your brain. And I think when we took a break, Greg, you were going to share with us about a 3-minute morning thing that we can do that will start us in the right direction for rewiring our brain.
Sure, Alan. Well, we wake up in the morning, we open the blinds, we do our morning hygiene, and then we find a comfortable place to sit. You know, people think that meditation is something that requires sitting still for 30 minutes and, you know, maybe not scratching an itch and banning all thoughts from our mind. And of course, that's not true. There are many types of meditation. Many of them begin with and are centered on the breath. So the breath is really important. But meditation doesn't have to be a long process. It can be done in as little as 3 minutes. And instead of banishing all thoughts from our mind, we're going to actually focus on thoughts. So we sit, we close our eyes, we first focus on our breath. And, you know, I just did a television interview a little while ago this morning, and it was about the vagus nerve in our parasympathetic nervous system, because this has had some mm-hmm. press in terms of how we can find calmness and how this involves the vagus nerve. So it turns out when we focus on our breath, when we slow our breath down, we activate the vagus nerve. We activate that side of our nervous system called the parasympathetic nervous system. And this is one that counteracts or quiets the sympathetic nervous system, or the fight or flight side of our nervous system, that's associated with increased levels of adrenaline circulating in our body, our heart rate going up, our blood pressure going up, increased cortisol, which is a hormone that causes our blood sugar to go up. So when we first just sit, close our eyes, and focus on our breath and slow it down, we're actually counteracting the sympathetic nervous system. We're slowing our heart rate. We're lowering our blood pressure. We're lowering our blood sugar. So we just sit with our eyes closed. We focus on taking the breath in slowly to a count of three, pausing to a count of three, and letting the breath go slowly to a count of four. So in to a count of three through our nose, pausing to a count of three, and then without effort, releasing the breath slowly to a count of four. And this will activate the vagus nerve, our parasympathetic nervous system, and have really beneficial physiologic effects on our bodies. And then we target our thoughts toward that for which we're grateful, the G in game. And, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes we get out of bed, and before we even get out of bed, we start having negative thoughts. Maybe our back is a little bit stiff. Maybe our knee hurts, or we have some other physical malady, and we focus on that. And because of our negativity bias, we, you know, our thoughts begin that day with negative thoughts about our physical bodies. Well, imagine what a miracle it is that the rest of our body is working so well. So maybe our back mm-hmm. is a little stiff, but, you know, our heart, our lungs, our kidneys, the rest of our bodies are working so well. And it's a miracle, really, how complex our physiology is. So we can start to shift our thoughts to the positive. And so as I begin my game practice every day, beginning with the breath and transitioning to gratitude, I'm first of all grateful for my health. And, you know, grateful that my body is working as well as it is, though imperfectly. I'm grateful for my loved ones, my friends, my community, the ability to do work helping others. I'm grateful for having a safe, comfortable place to live, unlike others in the world who live in very unsafe places, as we know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's much for which to be grateful. So we can spend 30 or 45 seconds just contemplating those things that are really a source of gratitude. And then we transition to the A in gain, which is acceptance, because we can't resist or suppress painful or uncomfortable thoughts and experiences. So this is our opportunity for really acknowledging them. So we take maybe an unpleasant or painful thought or experience, and we contemplate that, and we imagine bringing it closer and closer. We open our chest, we open our heart, and we bring this pain inside our heart. We actually envelop it and nurture it with our heart. So I lost my son 6 years ago at the age of 29. So this is often the first thing I think of. I bring that pain closer and closer into my heart, and I really, wrap my heart around it and sit with it as I also, you know, focus on the breath. And there's sort of a resonance of this experience that I lower my resistance to that painful thought or experience and really accept it. And there's a formula in the book, which is suffering equals pain times resistance. You know, we love formulas in medicine. So the pain is there, but if we resist it or fail to accept it, then our suffering increases. Suffering equals pain times resistance. So we let this thought or feeling or emotion, we let it be, we allow it. And we do that for 30 or 45 seconds. And then we move on to intention. And I often start my minute or so of contemplation of intention by simply focusing on my current experience. It can be my physical experience. So I notice the pressure of the chair against my body. I notice the faint tingling at the bottom of my feet. I'm between San Francisco and San Jose Airport, so I notice often an airplane going by in the distance. I notice the slightly sweet smell of the air that I'm breathing. So I focus on my current experience, my physical experience included, and this again is just rewiring the brain a little bit toward being present oriented, not being fixated on the past or the future, but really enjoying and appreciating the present moment. And then my other intention is generally being more positive, really looking at the optimistic angle, the positive, the light side of things. And I pledge today to do that just a little bit more. And then finally, I transition or retransition to the end in game, which is non-judgment. You know, we're always judging everything in our environment. And again, I go back to our negativity bias. We're often making negative judgments about the world, about others, and most notably about ourselves. We're our own harshest critics, as you know, Alan. And yeah, we judge ourselves negatively. And this, again, generates a lot of shame and regret. We think of things we said or did, and we regret them. We feel stupid or ignorant. So here we might, for example, picture one of these beautiful NASA images of the Earth, apparently suspended in space. It's a lovely planet, but it is itself neither good nor bad. So we sort of sit with this thought that the Earth is just a planet. It is neither good nor bad. It is simply the planet that it is. And then it's only logical for me to think, I too, I'm just a person. I'm simply the human being that I am. I'm neither good nor bad. I simply am what I am. And we sit with this I am-ness, and then we return to the breath, slowly taking it in, pausing, and releasing it very slowly. And we repeat that cycle of focusing on the breath, the slow inhalation, pausing, and exhalation. And then we slowly open our eyes, and we're ready to go out in the world. And it's really magical how we've spent 3 or 4 or 5 minutes actually rewiring our brains. And the miracle is that even after just a few days or weeks, when we find that we're being ungrateful or resisting or unintentional, lapsing back into our old ways of thinking, our negative ways of thinking, or being judgmental, when we do this and we've been practicing this game meditation, a little light bulb goes off and reminds us, oh, you know, you're judging that person. Just drop the judgment. That person, like myself, is neither good nor bad. And we can have a little laugh to ourselves. In fact, when we recognize this little light bulb moment, we often get a little hit of dopamine. And it's actually kind of a pleasant experience dropping that judgment of, say, the other driver who changed from the lane to the right to our lane without using their turn signal and maybe a little close. We start to make all these judgments and light bulb goes off. We can have a little laugh at our ways of thinking and let that judgment go. And, it becomes actually a pleasant experience.
Yeah, with that last example, the reason I smiled is I have a story that I tell of something that I did one time. And at a person that changed lanes and came so close to hitting us that I had to whip the wheel so strong that it felt like we were going up on two wheels. And I was just able to correct it. My heart was going 400 miles an hour. And when I did that, the freeway was coming up at a point to where it was splitting in two different things. And it pushed me into an area to where I was going to go off the middle. And we were up in the air. So, I mean, it would have been death. And I was able to make it. And my heart was beating. There's somebody sitting next to me. And I unconsciously turned and I looked towards the car that had just done this and said, I'm sorry. And the person next to me goes, what the hell are you sorry for? You've got nothing to be sorry for. That's and he's yelling, that guy almost killed us. And he's going on and on like this. He goes, how could you possibly be sorry? And I said, well, if you look at life from the fact that there's only a certain amount of universal intelligence that's floating around, and you and I are so smart that we sucked up so much that we didn't leave any for him. And he started laughing. And I said, now, doesn't that feel better that we're laughing? Because my heart's still racing, you know. But anyway, that's the story that I thought of as you were talking about the example of the car.
Yeah, well, you know, we're all mortal. We're all fallible. And so rather than harshly judge each other and then ourselves for our own fallibility, I love that story. I think to me, it exemplifies acknowledging our fallibility is another way to look at it. And yeah, that guy was, you know, not doing a very good job driving. On the other hand, you know, we too could be guilty of that at times. And, exactly. And regardless, the point is that we're all fallible. We all, you know, if somebody exemplifies anger and, you know, does something nasty to another person, they too are suffering and they're behaving that way for a reason. And, you know, to what extent are we all responsible for our emotions? You know, you can say that we're the product of our upbringing. Should we blame our parents? Well, they too are the product of their upbringing. So maybe we should blame our grandparents, but this goes on and on and on. And actually none of us are really to blame. Right. You know, those who belittle others, who treat each other unkindly, they often do that out of an insecurity or some other, you know, personality issue. And, you know, they are suffering. And so, you know, let's be compassionate. Let's recognize that we're all fallible. Yeah. And let's simply just drop the judgments of one another. And we can eventually learn what's even more difficult, and that is to drop the self-judgment.
Yes. Yeah, I think you're right, because I think in most cases we're hardest on ourselves. Now, when you were mentioning meditation, I'm someone that seems to go back and forth between a guided meditation, where in this day and age I use one that, you know, that you get on the internet. And then I go back and forth between that and then utilizing ones similar to what you're talking about, where I'm creating it as I go. You know, it's I'm thinking about different things, again, starting with the breathing. What are your thoughts on the differences between the two? And for some people, if they're struggling, is it better for them to maybe start with something that's guided until they feel comfortable enough to steer the ship themselves?
Well, you know, Alan, I think it's a very personal decision. For me, what I like about the game meditation is it's not only giving us the benefits of meditation, but it has a much broader applicability because, again, we're rewiring, we're training our brains to be more grateful, to reorient our thoughts toward gratitude, acceptance, having purpose or intention, a plan to be less judgmental. And so we get the benefit of the meditative practice, which brings us the parasympathetic activation and the sense of calm, decreasing our fear and anxiety and maybe easing our depression, giving us a more positive outlook, but also teaching us valuable lessons that we take with us during the day. And we have those light bulb moments. But again, I think that it's a personal thing. I think whatever works for the individual. I think some people respond to sitting with their eyes closed, focusing on the breath and listening to soothing music. Mm-hmm. Sound healing has become very popular. So there are apps that are really kind of sound based, music based. And there are others that are, have other narratives. And then certainly there are mantra based meditation apps. So I think whatever works, but I do like the idea of rewiring our brains because it's an acknowledgement that we are all hardwired in ways that seem to interfere with our ability to be happy. And, you know, I think one of the most important things for anybody who's listening and or watching is that nobody is alone in this. So the fact that we have this negativity, that we have depression, that we have fear and anxiety, we are not alone. This is the way all of us are wired. And, you know, this is something that we all share as humans, just as we're all fallible in a variety of ways. We all have this sort of negativity. We all have a tendency to be a little bit down and self-judgmental, et cetera. So this is not anybody's dirty little secret. This is something that we all share. And I like the GAIN method because it's directly aimed at these, you know, the ways our brains are wired in ways that impede our ability to be happy.
So, Greg, what does science tell us in regards to a timeline that once somebody, say they choose the GAIN method, and I know it can be different, and I've heard different numbers in the past, but what does science tell us as to what it takes for our brain to either learn a new habit or to unlearn an old habit or a bad habit?
I think, Alan, you know, we're getting in the area of kind of the softer science. I think, first of all, we're all very different. We right. learn in different ways. You know, I'm very visual. So, you know, when I'm watching a film, if I might miss some of the narrative in particular, like if it's a British production, I often turn on the subtitles when available because I learn by, you know, visually reading the words as well as hearing the words. Some people are annoyed by that. You know, they don't benefit from seeing the subtitles. The subtitles just get in their way. We all learn differently. And so we learn by different methods and we learn at our own pace. To me, as somebody who gives a lot of talks, a lot of lectures on medicine and science issues, I've come to believe that most of us learn in very small increments. So if I'm giving a talk for 50 minutes with 10 minutes for questions and answers, for example, I used to try to pack a lot of information into that 50 minutes and you know, a lot of information on each slide if I have slides and try to really get home, you know, a dozen or more important points. And I found that many people, including me when I'm in the audience, are overwhelmed by that. So I think the majority of people learn in small increments, in baby steps through repetition. So that's my approach. And I think, as I said, my experience is that with this method, first of all, that it's something that can be done in 3 minutes, it's easily digestible. It's kind of a bite-sized practice. And we can set our intention the night before. And I tell people, well, do set your intention the night before. Set your alarm 3 minutes earlier than you would otherwise. So you're already thinking about this practice when you go to sleep at night that you're going to do in the morning. And then, you know, instead of getting up at 6:30, you get up at 6:27. Who's going to miss the 3 minutes of sleep? Or you can go to bed 3 minutes earlier. Mm-hmm. And so this practice is really bite-sized. And I think people learn that way. And I think even after just days and weeks of doing this, we start to have those light bulb moments. So I think people do learn quickly. It may be that they're learning something bite size, but they're able to learn it quickly. But again, back to your question, I think that we all learn in different ways. You know, some of us learn a lot by touch. Some of us learn, you know, we have a photographic memory. Some of us learn more by listening. So we're podcast aficionados where we learn by listening to people speak. Some of us prefer reading because we learn more that way. So I don't think there's any one answer to that question. You know, so I think it's up to the individual, really.
Well, I want to share with everybody a little bit more about the book. In fact, we're about out of time. But again, the book is called GAIN Without Pain, The Happiness Handbook for Healthcare Professionals. Again, that's the name of it. But I want everybody to understand my feeling of it as I was reading it was this isn't just written for healthcare professionals. It might talk about some of the things that they go through, but I see it as anybody who has a heart for helping others. If you have a heart for other people, there are things in here that will help you in your life, just by taking on, again, something as very simple as a 3 minute, GAIN meditation. The other thought that I had when Greg just talked about getting up, you set your alarm for 3 minutes early. There's another thing you can do. You can set it 3 minutes early and then tell yourself that you're going to wake up 5 minutes early. and notice how powerful your brain is, that you'll wake up 2 minutes before that alarm goes off. And just knowing that will help you get more out of the gain method, because you recognize how powerful your brain is.
Very good point. I agree. And I think really the book is for everybody. It's really all about happiness and personal resilience. And that's something that we all need more of.
All right. If you want to get a hold of Greg, and the book is available anywhere. Website is greghammermd.com. Greg, is there anything else you'd like to share?
I would simply encourage everybody to, again, recognize that we're all in this together. We're all made of the same stuff. And, you know, anybody who thinks they've got their dirty little secret about the way they think, please be reassured that we're all the same. And the good news is we can all be on a path toward greater happiness together.
Well, Greg, thank you for coming on. Thank you for making a positive difference in the world, in your work, in your book, and especially what you're doing for our healthcare professionals that need all the support they can get.
Thank you, Alan. It's always great to be with you.
All right. For everybody out there, be with us next week. And even more so, visit our archives. Okay. So visit the archives of past interviews at answers.network. There'll be more information in regards to the show that we just had, or you can just subscribe to the show through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, Rumble, Spreaker, and so many more popular podcasts. In fact, I just met somebody that said that they were going to listen through Spotify, so I appreciate that. If you like what you hear, leave us a review. It helps us reach more people, and we want you to know it's greatly appreciated. The next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember, leave a review, leave some information about what you think of the show, and spread the word. So for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.